Blog Talk Radio.
Well then, the intro didn't play, but that's okay. I'll just intro it myself. How's everybody doing? This is Ron, Unsquish the Fish, and that was an odd start to the show, but hey, live radio, what are you going to do? With me here is Keith Beebe. How's it going, man?
Good. Live without a net, right?
Yeah, apparently so, because I waited a second. I'm like, okay, it's supposed to start automatically. Then I tried to push play, and it still didn't even start. I'm like, okay, well, screw it. I'll just start talking then, so it's not dead uncomfortable silence. All right, on today's show, we're going to talk about Miami Dolphins draft, of course, because from now until the draft, that's all we're going to mostly talk about. We're going to wrap up this Miko Grimes thing once and for all, at least from my end, I doubt from hers, and a whole lot more stuff. So with me is Keith from Finsiders Podcast, and why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, Keith?
I'm on Twitter. You can tweet me at and follow me at Keef, K-E-E-F, Dolphan, D-O-L-F-A-N. I changed it around because I thought it sounded real real catchy, I guess. So you can follow me there. And you can also check out our site. It's SB Nation's The Finsider.
All right. Cool, cool, man. So got the draft coming up, obviously. And
yeah.
We're sitting at 13. And right before the show, you were talking about you're really, I guess you're kind of either hopeful or thinking that we're going to be able to move out of that spot. Where would you hope to move to? Like how low can you go? Should I say, how low are you willing to go to where you're like, no, I'm not comfortable going this low?
I think where the Dolphins want to go is ideally somewhere in the late teens, probably no further than the early 20s. And the reason I say that is because I think a lot of the prospects who make the most sense for what they want to do on defense can be had in that range. I don't think they'll all be available there. I mean, you've been a part of those discussions we've had on Twitter with people arguing about, you know, Eli Apple and William Jackson III and Reggie Ragland. I think one of those guys, at least one of those guys, will go probably prior to, we'll say like number 17, number 18 overall, somewhere in that mix. So, but I think that probably like the sweet spot in that round for where the Dolphins can get their guy if they want to move down, I think is right in that range. We'll say 18 or 19 to, let's go 23. I think that's a good range.
Okay. All right. And that's who you're targeting. You're hoping to get one of those guys, but hoping that you can get them about maybe 8-10 spots lower or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're good prospects. I'm a bigger fan of Jackson III than I am Eli Apple, although I know that Eli Apple's picking up a lot of steam and momentum in terms of overall draft stock. But I think that Reggie Ragland is probably, which I don't know if you noticed on Twitter, but because you were talking about him a few weeks ago, and you still get those people who are like, he's a two-down linebacker. I don't know if he's worth
that. I don't believe that, but I know people keep saying it.
Yeah, I think that he needs to get better in coverage, but I think the athleticism is there to do that in coverage. There's a difference between having the ability to cover and just not being very good at it, because you need to be coached up, you need to be shown a few things. And there's just the linebackers who don't belong in pass coverage, and you don't want them in the game on third down. And I think that Reggie Ragland likely falls into the former. I think he's got the athleticism. I think he surprised a lot of people at the combine with how he ran. You saw a lot of people thinking that he'd probably run close to like a 4.9, or I saw even some people predicting like 5 flat, but I mean, he was in the low 4.7s. So I thought he looked good in that regard. I like his play speed. He's not like a super rangy sideline to sideline guy, but I like the way he moves. I think he's instinctual. I just like the way he plays the game. So I think that he can be taught that. And, I think he's going to be a good get. You see some people arguing about him, but the reason I brought him up was on Twitter today. There's like this, it's funny how this whole draft trend sort of progresses and takes shape as we get closer to the actual draft night on April 28th. But now it's like today, a lot of people had Ragland fever. All of a sudden it's like, oh, you would have thought that this is the first time they've seen him play. So it's just funny how this whole process kind of unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, he's been one of the – when I was first looking at this a couple months ago, I was so stuck on we just need to fix a linebacker spot. But I've come to a new realization that probably cornerback or even defensive end, because we have two that are in their 30s, would be more important in a better pick if we can get a good one. But I still love Ragland, and I still won't be unhappy if we draft him. But I'm with you. I'm starting to feel like, God, if we could move back a little bit. But don't you kind of feel like everybody wants to move back? And once you get out of the top 10, from like 10 to 25, don't you feel there's going to be the 12, 13 teams out of those 15 teams growing, drafting from 10 to 25 that wouldn't mind moving back?
No doubt.
Concern, you know what I mean?
I think that – well, if you're the Dolphins, the reason it makes sense to trade back is because while this is an outstanding prospect pool in terms of defense, it's vast. I mean, outside of like the top prospects, you know, your Jalen Ramsey's, your Miles Jags, maybe DeForest Buckner's in there, depending on how you feel about him. Maybe Vernon Hargreaves is in there, depending on how you feel about him as a player. But I'd say that there's probably five or six elite level or elite caliber or elite capable guys in this draft, and it probably cuts off with Ezekiel Elliott. So after that, you're talking about a lot of really good defensive prospects, and you know, some of them fit particular schemes, some of them are 3-4 guys, some of them make much more sense in a 4-3. So if you're the Dolphins and you're sitting at 13, I mean, you're far out of that range. I mean, they're not expected to see Ezekiel Elliott, though. I mean, who knows? So at that point, you think, well, yeah, you'd like to trade down, because the guys you're looking to get, if you're looking to pick up corners who excel in zone, you can typically find those guys late in the first round and typically throughout day two. The linebacker, we already mentioned Reggie Ragland. A lot of the pass rushers, especially if they're running a wide nine, you're not looking for a complete skill set at a pass rusher position. I mean, they could go with they could trade back, or they could even take like a guy like a Leonard Floyd, who is, you know, kind of like that tweener outside linebacker. I mean, he's far too thin to really play a 4-3 end, although they said the same thing about Jason Taylor, and that's who they're comparing him to, which kind of seems like sacrilege for Dolphins fans who grew up watching that guy play. But if you're running a wide nine and you stick Leonard Floyd in there, that's a knockout. Just like, I mean, Deion Jordan would be outstanding in that role. But those aren't guys that, I mean, you absolutely have to have at 13. Cause I mean, those are role type guys in a way. I mean, they fit what you want to do, but they're not all that. It's not one size fits all with them. So, I mean, yeah, if you can trade down, and I understand that, yeah, that's everyone wants to do that. But we mentioned Jared Goff dropping, and that's like the big rumor right now, that they don't know that San Francisco would take him at number 7 overall. And if they don't, then, because you have that sort of defensive gauntlet between picks 8, provided Philadelphia doesn't shock everyone, you'd have that gauntlet going back. I don't think Chicago would take a quarterback, although who knows. And then, I mean, who's the logical endpoint? I mean, it goes to the Rams, and I think the Rams are at 15 or 16. I think it's 15, though.
They're right. I know they're kind of right a little bit after us.
Yeah, I know right after us is Oakland, and then I think it's the Rams. So, I mean, that's a position where if there's a team that likes Jared Goff, and you have to figure that the Rams are going to take Jared Goff. They're moving to the Coliseum. I mean, you want to make an impact. I mean, you're restarting your brand in Los Angeles, where it's not a given that people are going to go to those games. It's kind of like in South Florida. You know, you have to be good. I mean, it's if you want people to fill up your stadium, I mean, you have to have a quality product. I mean, people aren't just going to show up.
Because there's just like Miami, there's lots to do, plenty to be entertained by. It's not Green Bay.
Exactly. Yeah, Green Bay, where the entire city shuts down while on Sundays. Yeah, in L.A., there's plenty to do. And on most people's list, going to see the Rams play, probably not going to crack the top 10. But if you're winning and you're able to get a young quarterback in there, like a hot shot Los Angeles quarterback, that sounds pretty good. And that's something you can really sell your brand with. So, I mean, that's a ton of speculation. Maybe the Rams like Connor Cook. Maybe they want to trade back and take a shot at a guy like that. Or maybe they're prepared to make that pick at 15 and just laugh at everyone and say, you guys were talking about Paxton Lynch and Jared Goff, and we had our guy the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, who knows, but you use them as a sort of pawn, and you're able to bait other teams because of that. So, I mean, that's just one way you can approach it, but who knows, maybe Miami likes where they're at 13, and there's a player that we've talked about, maybe we haven't, and they're prepared to take that guy at 13. I mean, all we can do is speculate, but I mean, with Mike Tannenbaum, who really knows?
That's true. Now, I am part of another podcast called Next Fan Up, and it's one where it's one fan represents each team. It's produced by Jay Soderberg, known also as Pod Vader. He used to be an ESPN producer, and he works for Blog Talk now. So we're actually doing our draft currently as we speak. Now it's a slow draft. It's kind of like one of those old ones you used to do on the internet before they had like live fantasy football drafting. You would draft and then like 10 hours later somebody else drafted. It's kind of like that, but we started today, and the first, I can just run through it because we've only gone through 7-8. The first pick off the board, actually the Titans, a new Titans guy who just started, he took Jalen Ramsey and not Tunzel. So that was kind of interesting. And then the Browns guy, who's also kind of a newer fan, he took Jared Goff, did not take Wentz. How do you feel about that? Because I just found it interesting how we kept hearing so much about Goff right as the end of the season. And then sometime in January, all of a sudden it was all about Wentz and nothing to do with Goff, yet football had not been played. When football was being played, everybody was talking about Goff. So how did that happen? How did that Carson Wentz all of a sudden got so much more likely to be drafted over Jared Goff? What's your opinion on that?
That's tough to see, because if that did happen, that would mean that Cleveland really bluffed everyone. Because, I mean, all signs right now point to them taking Carson Wentz. And, I mean, you wonder if the guy making the pick wasn't a fan of the fact that Carson Wentz is a North Dakota State guy as opposed to Jared Goff playing at California. Maybe he thinks Jared Goff, he likes the fact that Jared Goff comes from the same school as Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. But, yeah, that would – I mean, this is the season of – you always see – they call it, like, smoke screens. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of leads that go nowhere and a lot of dead ends. So, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I know Hugh Jackson came out and talked about the whole hand size thing, which is kind of where Jared Goff's draft stock went sideways, if you will, when he went to the combine and – his hands were, 9 inches, and then I think his pro day, they were 9 1/4 or something. So they, I mean, whatever. I don't know how your hands grow. So
he put, like, some books on them for a while, flattened them out. Yeah. I don't know.
There's a theory that he had massage therapy done, because I guess that will go ahead and loosen up the joints and get rid of a lot of the acidic buildup. So, I mean, there's plenty of tricks around this. I don't know. But yeah, that would be the ultimate bluff card, no? If Cleveland went up to the podium, or, you know, Goodell makes that pick for Cleveland and they took Goff, after all you heard for pretty much 2.5 months was, you know, Wentz is their guy. And, I mean, the funny thing is you can't rule it out. I mean, we were just talking about Jared Goff falling and serving as, like, a nice trade chip for the Dolphins. But, I mean, that guy could go at number 2, and then, I mean, what happens there? You know, does Carson Wentz fall? I mean, does Dallas take him? Does San Francisco put all their plans on hold because he's a quarterback they draft? I mean, it's maddening when you consider all of the variables that exist in this and how each one could completely unravel any suspicion or predictions we have regarding how this draft plays out.
So let's pretend for a minute that there's one of the quarterbacks sitting at 13. So we just sit there and wait for the phone to ring, or are we seeking out potential interested traders and trying to actually call them? I don't know if you know anything about the inside of it or how that works.
No, I wish. I am such a wannabe in that regard. But with the Rams sitting there, I would imagine that their phone is going to ring. Especially because I mentioned that they're likely sitting at the back end of a defensive gauntlet, unless the Bears shock or Philadelphia. Because, I mean, we keep making jokes about New Orleans. And, yeah, New Orleans maybe could too. But New Orleans defense is so bad that if you have a guy there on defense, I think they would probably take him. But I mean, again, as we just mentioned with Goff going at number two, I mean, what if you have Goff fall and then all of a sudden New Orleans is like, yep, we'll take you. And they snag him with the number 12 pick after everyone, including me, has had nothing but defensive players going there, especially defensive line guys. So to answer your question, I would imagine that if a guy does make it down to 13, let's say Goff does. I think you'd be taking some calls, but I think you'd also be, well, you'd field some, and I think you'd also reach out too, especially to the team you think, or the teams that are in the range that you would like to trade down to. And I mean, like, that kind of sounds like a pipe dream because a lot has to go right for that to happen. It's not teams like, well, these guys seem legitimate, so let's go ahead and trade with them. I mean, it's not going to work out that way.
Hold on one second there. I think we got somebody calling in here. I'm going to answer it and see who it is. All right. All right, caller, you're on. Who are we speaking with?
You know who this is.
What's up, Lewis? What's going on?
Not much.
How you doing, man? So apparently I tweeted out the incorrect number. So if you're listening and you want to call in and you're following the Twitter number, whoops. It's 773-897-6237. Apparently, I tweeted something else. My bad.
Yeah, you tweeted 6327.
Well, this show is just going off great. Let's see. It started. The intro music didn't play. Tried to hit play. It wouldn't play. I tweeted out the wrong number. I'm a professional, man. What can I say?
Well, are you by yourself, though? Where's Keith? Hello?
I'm right here.
Ah, okay. So you're not so bad off.
I'm just rambling to myself for 15 minutes, hoping somebody calls and magically figures out it's the wrong number on top of it. Oh, good time. We were actually just talking, Lewis, a little bit about the trade down scenarios and what it would look like. And if there's a quarterback when we hit the 13, you know, or how are we going to try and pull off this trade? And I even asked Keith how low he was willing to go where he was still comfortable. And so I'll ask you that same question. How low would you be willing to trade down in the first or even eliminating the first round if you're comfortable with that? What would you think, Lewis? How low can you go before you're like, no, I don't – that's just too, down too deep into the first?
Well, if we were going to trade out of the first round, I would say that I really need a serious return. I would need like a second rounder, a third rounder, and something else because like trading out of the first round is a big freaking deal, so – Now, with that said, I would go down, I would think, to 20 or so, because right about that point, I would think that somebody like a Reggie Ragland is going to start popping off the board, or maybe a William Jackson or somebody along those lines, because like we all want to act like these players are just, they're not that good, no team's going to pick them, but I'm looking around the first round, like all these prospects and whatever, there's nobody besides like the first five that really wow you to any extent. So it's really, it's a crapshoot. It depends on scheme fits. It depends on whether a team really needs that position or not. And I imagine that cornerbacks are not easy to find. So they'll probably grab those. And of course there's always the quarterback, the quarterback situation. And once you get past Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, then you get to the point where, okay, Paxton Lynch and Cardale Jones. And like I said last night on my show is that it was last night. I'm already losing track. It's not as easy as it seems to just kind of trade down, especially in a draft where players are not all that special. I mean, just looking around, a lot of players are interchangeable depending on just scheme fit. Like if you are playing man press, you probably want Mackenzie Alexander. If you're playing zone, you probably want Vernon Hargreaves. Either or is preferable if you're just looking for talented cornerbacks, period, and you're just kind of looking to see what kind of scheme you want to build to begin with. So depending on which one you drafted, you could build that defense. But these guys, nobody wow worthy. And so having a mid-first rounder or so is kind of a difficult spot to be in unless the team behind you is one of those teams that are desperate for a quarterback and there's no guarantee that they're going to be willing to trade with you. They could trade with another team who's a little lower on the board, who are not quarterback needy, and
unless they were going to hold the quarterback ransom, which could happen. I don't think they will, but that's something else altogether. I don't see the need. I don't see trading down actually happening. Now, I don't. That's not to say that they should try. They should always try and get more picks. I just don't think it'll happen. I'd be willing to go down to 20, but not much farther than that, because at that point it's going to start becoming. You're really going to roll the dice because you just don't know what some teams are going to pick.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I kind of have this feeling that we're just going to really be staying at 13. I mean, you never know what might happen, but we're going to likely stay at 13. But I was just saying before you hopped on, Lewis, on the next Fan Up podcast, we're doing the mock draft right now as we speak, and we're at pick 7. Well, we're at pick 8, but we got held up by the Eagles fan because he seems to be MIA or something. But Jalen Ramsey went off the board.
That's Miami.
I'm sorry?
That's Miami. MIA is Miami.
No, we're at 13 now, not 8. we were at 8. And
he's confused.
Yeah, it's okay. We got Jalen Ramsey went off the board first, then Jared Goff instead of Wentz to Cleveland. Laremy Tunsil went to San Diego, which the San Diego guy had to be happy because he was upset that he really wanted Tunsil or nobody, so somehow he just ended up with him. Dallas,
whoever's drafting for Tennessee is not very smart.
Oh man, God, I hope he's not listening. I actually know him.
Okay,
Jason,
yeah,
called out, man.
Yeah, go ahead and let Marcus Mariota take another beating. Sure, who cares? Why not?
Yeah.
We'll really make him Tannehill 2.0.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what
go.
Though? I will say this though, that it's shaping up that you're going to see a lot of. We'll say two or three of the left tackle prospects in this draft might slide to day 2. And I mean, if you're sitting there with that pick and you think that you can outsmart everyone and get the best player in the draft, likely in Jalen Ramsey, and then you can get, if you're fortunate, like a Jason Spriggs out of Indiana falls to the second round, I think if you're Tennessee, you should do cartwheels because that's outstanding. And I think the better cycles will come out of this. So it's off risky. I don't know that I would do it, especially if you're a regime change in place. I don't know if that's the best way to go ahead and introduce yourself to the fan base. But, I mean, who knows? I would take Laremy Tunsil, but I think I understand where they think if they go with Jalen Ramsey, because then they're banking on a tackle slipping to day 2.
Yeah, and then the Cowboys guy, he took Bosa. So, I mean, I guess, obviously this isn't the real draft, but we've heard a lot about Bosa slipping. He didn't in this draft. Jacksonville fan took Miles Jack. And then there was a trade. Rams jumped up to 6, traded with Baltimore at the 6th pick, and took Carson Wentz. So that was interesting because we allowed trades in this mock. And then San Fran took Vernon Hargreaves, which a lot of people have talked about dropping down. So now we're just kind of waiting for the Philly pick. Maybe he was hoping for Wentz and didn't expect a trade, so he doesn't know what to do. I'm not sure, but I thought that was interesting. I was kind of hoping the way it was going that I would actually be doing this pick live while we were doing the show. I was hoping for that, but it didn't quite go that way. So that's fine. I'll probably be doing the pick sometime tomorrow, I guess. Sometime tomorrow afternoon or evening. So don't worry. I'll be letting you guys know ahead of the pick to see what we all think, see who's left. And we'll make a pick together as a Dolphins fan community there. Because it's all about bragging rights anyway. The whole point of this is you want to get it right. Because when they call it out in 2, 3, 4 years, even if you're not the Dolphins fan anymore, you want to be like, yeah, I was smarter than the team that actually picked them. You know, that's really what it's all about. There's no other reason that you really want to get the pick right besides that.
I've done that before. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, too. And by the way, for anybody listening, that's a next Fan Up podcast. You can hear that on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio as well. Follow it on Twitter at NFU Podcast. And we'll be doing shows. We'll actually draft all the way into like the 3rd or 4th round. It's not just a first round draft. So that should get interesting until like everybody starts to just lose interest or something.
Once you get to those rounds, it's like, who?
Exactly. You just start getting to a point. I got to be honest with you, and even for me, because I'm not a draft guru by any stretch of the imagination. We've been doing a Twitter polls for each position, for each first through 32nd. or 31 in this case. And it even got to a point where they would put four names on the choice on the board. I'm like, two or three of these guys, I don't even know who these guys are. Keith, I'm sure you would know who they all were, but I would just be like, I guess this guy, or it'd be a team. I don't really know their needs. It's like, I have no idea, but it's fun for this, 'cause we're all just picking for our own teams. That's it. So it's pretty cool. So you guys can check that out again at NFU Podcast on Twitter, Next Fan Up. All right, guys, I want to move on. And not that we won't end up coming back some to the draft, because it always seems to circle back to that. But I wanted to talk a little bit. And last night on Fin Maniacs, Lewis, we towards the end there started talking about Arian Foster. Should we or shouldn't we? Now, apparently when he came into town, it was really just a fact-finding mission by the Dolphins.
But, yeah, we knew that, though.
Yeah, but me and Chad Rannenbaum, and I don't know, I apologize, I don't know Chad's Twitter handle, but I don't know, do you know his Twitter handle?
Yeah, I know, it's at GoFins4SB.
Is it FinsPH or FinsF?
It's with an F.
Okay, so GoFins for Super Bowl, in essence. GoFins4SB? Super Bowl?
SB. Yep.
Okay.
Like the initials.
It was like one of the, like you said, it was kind of one of the rare true disagreements. He was just pretty much like no on Arian Foster, and I was like yes. So Keith, we were kind of thinking you might hop on last night, and you didn't. So you're gonna get a shot here, get the first shot. What are your thoughts on Arian Foster?
Wow, I don't have a problem with it, just because I think that if they're looking to go ahead and find a good compliment, find a good spell for Jay Ajayi, I think that Arian Foster makes sense. And plus, I don't think you bring him in and all of a sudden you look at your backfield as set up for the next 5 years, though. So, I mean, it's a nice stopgap move. It's nice if you want to go ahead and use Arian Foster to go ahead and set up the pieces you have back there. And if you want to go ahead and likely add to that in next year's draft, which is absolutely loaded in terms of running backs, or if you want to bring in a guy this year, this is a good running back class in 2016 too. So, I mean, I don't have an issue with it. I don't think that the Dolphins are putting themselves out there or taking any unnecessary risks by bringing in Arian Foster, but it's also not a move that's going to define the Adam Gase era.
And no, I didn't really think. Oh, go ahead, Lewis. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that, if Arian, like, let's just say for a minute that Arian Foster actually comes out and he comes out and plays and he's healthy with Miami. I mean, let's be honest about this. Arian Foster, like, every year that he has been at least relatively healthy, he's run for over 1,000 yards, and that includes back in 2014. So it's not like Arian Foster is suddenly this old fart who can't run the ball anymore and he'd just be like this guy who just happens to be there. No, Arian Foster could make a very strong push to be the number one guy and mentor Jay Ajayi. So the move for us, it may be, even if it is a stopgap move, it's not a move that says we're just looking for a veteran backup to help Jay Ajayi get a spell or two. I would think that Arian Foster is going to come in there and say, okay, let me show you what I can do and why I'm still starter material.
What was Chad's main issue with it? The injury or the age?
Yes, it was essentially he doesn't trust Foster.
He doesn't think he's any good anymore. He really doesn't think he's good anymore. I don't think it's just about the injury. He thinks the injuries have made him not a good back. And my argument was
well,
15
months
ago, this
guy
was rushing for 1,300 yards.
Did he say that, though? I don't remember him saying that he just doesn't think he's good. He thinks he doesn't trust the injury.
He said it's been a long time since he's been good, which it really hasn't, if you look at it, to me, hasn't been that long. Yes, he has definitely suffered through injuries, and I get that, but it hasn't been that long since he's been good. And then you even point out to me, I didn't even know. I thought he was a free agent. He was a cut player. So he doesn't even, you know, get rid of one of the golden compensatory picks that we're coveting so much right now, which I don't have a problem with that. But we're definitely coveting them when we didn't seem to give a crap about them the last 4 or 5 years. So, I mean, just for me, I mean, a few million dollars, even if it was $4 million, like I said, guess what? If you were to cut Dallas Thomas, you save almost $2 million with only $150,000 in dead money. So you can get half of that back by cutting the crappiest guard on your team. So I just, for me, $2 million, unless the knee is just total trash garbage, I don't think that's a lot of risk. That's pretty much what you're talking about, in my opinion. when you talk about that trade-off. I get it doesn't exactly work like that. It's not swapping Dallas Thomas for, you know, Arian Foster. I understand that. But, I mean, you could probably find five other players on the team that would save you some money too that could be cuts. I just think it's worth it because if it hit, it would be such a benefit to the team this year. And there aren't a lot of moves we've made that really have been – that is are really going to necessarily benefit us this year. We're kind of in a rebuilding mode, even though we say we're not. This would be a move to really kind of help us actually maybe compete a little bit this year. Not that I think we're going to be great, but that it's one of the few moves I feel that will help us instantly. With not you're not giving up the future, you're not giving up picks, you're not giving up any of that. So that's why I'm so big on wanting them to try and sign Arian Foster.
I think the injury is scary. But at the same time, with how prudent the Dolphins have been in free agency, especially with the running backs, if they're pursuing him and they do sign him, I mean, we said yesterday, everyone said pretty much that you called it a fact-checking assignment, which it's totally that. But if they pursue him and they sign him, I'm going to go on a limb and say that he can still play. Because, I mean, the Dolphins could have signed three running backs by this point, you know. So, I mean, if they're either that or they've completely lost it if they're going to pursue Arian Foster over the other guys who have been out there. So until, I mean, we see anything further, I mean, the injury at that age for a running back is a little bit troublesome. But, I mean, you do see these rare examples of these older running backs who, I mean, they might get banged up, they might get injured, but they're, I mean, still good players. And a guy who is a shining example of that is Matt Forte, who hasn't exactly been the healthiest guy, but he's been in the league, since 2008. I mean, he's no spring chicken, but he's still a very good player and a guy a lot of Dolphins fans wanted to see in Miami.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, they wanted Forte, but they have no interest in Foster. I don't understand. I get that Forte hasn't been as injured recently, but I don't know. I'm not sure that – I mean, maybe I'm just stuck on Foster because he's driven me home to a couple fantasy championships, but I just think the guy's a really good player, and I still believe that he is.
He's murdered the Dolphins, too. I mean, the guy is a lifelong Dolphins killer, so it'd be nice
We're just getting all the Dolphins killers now. Oh, you
kill
us?
Yeah, Mario Williams.
Come on and play. And I like the fact that – and kind of switching gears for a second, but I like the fact that Chad Jones, and Mario Williams, two guys that just tormented Tannehill, will no longer be doing so, or at least in the games. Maybe Williams in practice a little bit, but that's nice. Any final thoughts, Lewis, on the Arian Foster thing? Because you didn't actually talk about it last night. You kind of just let me and Chad go back and forth.
All I would really say is that the whole Arian Foster skepticism feels like a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately mentality, because Matt Forte did play last year, and so people seem to conveniently forget that he's been injured. And again, with the whole Arian Foster injury thing, it's not like he came back from injury and wasn't his old self. Every year he's been healthy, he's run for over 1,000 yards. It's not even a debate whether that's because they just used him until he couldn't run anymore or whether it's because he's just that good. It means that he at least has some gas left in the tank. It's not like we would be getting this old fart running back who's 34 years old and he can barely move anymore. Foster, even when he's hurt, when he's hurt, he can't do anything, obviously, because he's hurt. But once he comes back, he's Arian Foster. So if we're really serious about, like, trying to do this stopgap thing and trying to give people time to develop and all this lovely, fluffy words, then Arian Foster would be the perfect running back to tutor Jay Ajayi, because the one thing that Jay Ajayi does not have right now is vision and ability to wait for his hole. That's what Arian Foster does as a that's what Arian Foster is a master at.
Okay.
I don't disagree with any of that.
All right, we're going to have fun for like 5-10 minutes. Okay, we're just going to switch the subject. I didn't plan on doing this, but I was kind of just...
Are we going to talk about Batman versus Superman?
No, we're not talking about Batman versus... Man, the more I hear about that, the more nervous I get. Okay, but I don't want to get into that. Okay, I'm still going to go watch it Sunday, but I'm getting more and more nervous the more people tell me about it. We're going to actually switch gears for 5-10 minutes, and we're going to play a little game of where would you draft them, and we're going to actually talk about fantasy football for like 5-10 minutes, because I haven't for 4 months, I guess, because my team sucked last year. All my fantasy teams were just horrible last year. They were really bad. Let's go with let's pretend we signed Arian Foster and we think the knee's okay. Where would you draft Arian Foster in fantasy football next year in like a 12 team league? Go ahead, Keith. I'll let you go first.
You said the knee's good.
Yeah, the knee. You feel pretty confident in the knee. I mean, we know nothing's perfect, but you feel pretty confident in the knee.
Well, what kind of league are we in? I mean, one that's like running back heavy, or are we in PPR?
Yeah, just your typical, we'll put it, your typical, you know, 1 point for every 10 yards, full 6 point touchdown, no PPR.
Third round latest, I think that in probably the league that I'm in, he probably goes second.
Okay. What about you, Lewis?
I would have to analyze the roster and see who it is that's being played as a starter, because it only helps if they're on the field. If they're looking at Arian Foster as a backup, then I probably wouldn't go into fourth round or so. If he's going to be the starter, then yeah, probably second round, third round latest. It depends on the role he has.
Okay. I got to kind of feel that if we bring in Arian Foster and the knee's good, Arian Foster's the starter. That's the way I feel about it. The knee's good, he's the starter. I'm not a hater on Jay Ajayi. Not at all. You know, I like him, but I feel like he's the starter. All right, let's go Jarvis Landry. Again, we're not PPR. So Jarvis Landry next year, where are you drafting him?
He's going in the second round probably, especially in the league that I'm in, because I had that Satan experience come up where I had probably like the number two overall pick. And when you do that, you take a running back, and then you're always hoping to get, you know, an upper echelon wide receiver on the swing. And in the span of from the second pick to when it came back to me, all of the top wide receivers were gone. So I think Jarvis Landry is firmly in my league. Probably, again, I'll give him probably no lower than the third round, maybe the fourth round, depending on what league you're in. But I know that probably in my league, he'll go second.
All right, yeah. What about you, Lewis?
Whichever round comes before the round that Matthew Cannata has a chance to pick him.
Okay. You're really strategizing here. You're assuming who's in your league as well and knowing their tendencies.
It's not just that, Ron. This is a funny story. We were drafting last year, and it was for our Just for Fun league, and Matt told me. And Matt told everybody, nobody draft Jarvis Landry. I'm going to pair him with Ryan Tannehill, okay? So, naturally, come my turn comes up, Lewis, don't you dare! Click, click, Tannehill and Landry, and everybody's mad at me, so.
Nice. See, so, I guess I have an advantage that most of the leagues I play in, there's little to no Dolphins fans, because I live kind of more in Central Florida, East Coast, Palm Bay, Florida, for anybody who really wants to know or cares, and there's no Dolphins fans. You got Patriots fans coming out, you know, the wazoo. So all the Patriots players are just flying off the board. So anytime I do like a Dolphins player, which when I first started playing fantasy football, it was always me with all my crappy Dolphins players 7-8 years ago. And then as I got a little smarter, I kind of stopped drafting them. But then as their offense got a little better last year and, you know, last couple of years, I would start to kind of select them. I think I'm pretty sure I got Jarvis Landry last year in both leagues, eighth or ninth round. I mean, I think that's crazy, but that's where I got him because just no one was interested, you know? So I would go Jarvis Landry probably third round this year. It hurts me to do that too, knowing how, what a value I got last year, but he's just not going to be as much of a value this year as he was last year. It's just all there is to it. All right. Here's one that'd be more interesting. What about DeVante Parker? Now he's an interesting one in fantasy this year. Lewis, I'll let you go first. Where are you drafting him this year in fantasy?
Whichever round comes before Matthew Cannata.
Give me a number, man. Give me a number.
I'll probably go third round or something along those lines because, well, DeVante Parker, I expect him to be good. He's more of a projection pick. He's not somebody who you just know is going to ball out and become a superstar. Like, you hope he does. Third, fourth, maybe even fifth round. You have to get rid of all the, I know this player is really good already, and I know this player has a good chemistry with their quarterback kind of a guy. Parker is a, I hope this really works out guy, and that's when you start taking chances. So Parker's still one of those guys you just see what happens. He's not a sure thing. So third, fourth, fifth round.
Okay, cool. What about you, Keith?
I think he's probably – I think fifth is probably a good place for him. I can almost guarantee that he's going to be on every ESPN sleeper pick list. I think he was last year as a rookie, and now you've got a situation where Adam Gase comes in. You're expecting more production from the quarterback position. So I think that Devontae Parker is going to end up being a darling on a lot of fantasy analysts' list. So I think that he'll get overdrafted in some leagues. I had him last year for a little while. I'm trying to remember because he was drafted and it's not coming. It was like a late round thing. I think it was one of the late, probably like the 12th round or something. But I think that fifth is probably where he'll end up going. He'll be the guy where, people like me last year who loaded up on running backs and then found out that it was pretty slim pickings in terms of wide receivers. He's kind of like a poor man's, a shot at a right now, like a wide receiver one, or a wide receiver two, if you will. And he's like that guy where if he performs well, he could put up numbers somewhere or in that vicinity. So fifth round seems good though.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I wouldn't go higher than the fifth round. And again, the leagues I'm in, I know I can wait till the fifth round to draft him if I wanted to. But I definitely cannot go in with Parker as my number one. Like if he's my number one wide receiver, then I have to have one of the best tight ends, one of the best running backs, hopefully, and or Gronk, and a pretty damn good quarterback. I need to have solidified those positions if Parker is my number one wide receiver. But if I had, or at least two of those three, and they were like some of the top guys, I'd feel comfortable. So for me, it'd probably be fifth round. Got another caller here. It's actually a friend of mine, big Dolphins fan, Keith. Hold on one second. I'm going to click him in. I'm going to try and click him in. Hey, there we go. What's up, Keith? Can you hear us, man? What's going on?
What's going on, Ron? How you guys doing?
We're good. We were actually just BSing, me. We were actually BSing about some fantasy football, believe it or not. It's draft time, and I'm probably the only podcast in the United States talking about fantasy football that is not exclusively a fantasy football podcast. But so
you got to keep yourself busy before draft time comes anyway.
I guess so, because I know like 12 players. That's the problem, really. That's why I got to have – like I have Keith and Lewis on here. This is a friend of mine, Keith. He's been my boy forever. We go to the practices and stuff a lot of times, except for the last couple of years he's been living in Tennessee, but he's back in Florida for now anyway. Right, Keith? You're not moving back to Tennessee,
yeah,
are you?
I don't have any plans of moving back to Tennessee anytime soon. The last ice storm that we had this past winter before I moved down there, I've had enough of the ice. I'm ready for palm trees and sand.
All right, man. So, what do you want to do? What's on your mind, man? What do you want to talk about with the Miami Dolphins tonight?
Well, I mean, I noticed when I first called in, you guys were talking about fantasy, and that's one thing where I'm still trying to get my feet really wet in the fantasy world. But my biggest thing is I've heard a lot of talk going on with Gase and, how he's supposed to be this quarterback guru. And I don't know if you've already talked about Tannehill a little bit. Have you guys discussed Tannehill at all?
I have not brought him up. I don't know that his name – well, his name might have been mentioned once, but I don't know that his name's even been mentioned tonight so far. But so feel free to talk about anything you like, man.
Well, my biggest thing is all the speculation going on about Gase. And, he's got a good reputation for being able to turn quarterbacks around and stuff like that. But where I'm at now here in Fort Myers, we've got a bunch of Dolphin fans, and they're talking about we're one or two players away from actually being a true contender, and we've talked about this briefly on the phone before, and I just don't know if Gase is going to be able to do what needs to be done to get Tannehill to turn around. I don't know at this point, and last year I was a huge Tannehill fan. I supported him, I backed him up, I defended him. And a couple of podcasts, but I'm to the point now, I just don't know if Tannehill's going to make that turn to start being productive enough to win us some football games. Now, I know it's not just him. I mean, it's our defense, too, and our defense is I mean, we just won't even get into that right now. But what do you think Tannehill is actually going to be able to do this year, if anything? Because I heard just a few minutes ago Devontae Parker's name come up and how he's going to have a bigger role, hopefully, in the Gase offense. And I'm hoping that's the case. But if it's not, I mean, how far do you think Tannehill can take us now after last year's performance?
Keith Beebe, I got to say the last name now because I got Keith. Yeah, Keith Beebe, I'll let you take that one first, man. How good do you think Tannehill can be first year under Gase?
I think that you'll see, I use the term significant improvement, although if you're talking about can he be the guy, I think that's the main question. I mean, we can talk about winning more games under Adam Gase. You can talk about increased production, better efficiency at the position, but really we're talking about, can Ryan Tannehill get this team to the playoffs, win playoff games, get them eventually to a Super Bowl? That's what we're all wondering here. We'll find out about the makeup and whether he's got that real early on with Adam Gase. Adam Gase is, from what I saw with Jay Cutler, is a guy who eliminates a lot of the nonsense right out of the gate. So you'll know. I mean, nobody looks at Jay Cutler and thinks he's a Super Bowl quarterback. But Jay Cutler played well last year, especially after Chicago was burning their Jay Cutler jerseys after the 2014 season. And Adam Gase actually convinced Bears fans and Chicago to buy back in on Jay Cutler and his terrible contract that he has. So you're going to know early on. We're going to find out whether Ryan Tannehill's worth, you know, if the juice is worth the squeeze at this point. If he's not, after a year, you can expect this team to make some changes at the quarterback position. And it might not be drastic. It's certainly not going to be overnight. But the thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, Joe Philbin and company built up an impressive roster and did jack squat with it. You know, I mean, and some of the additions that they did make, it was underwhelming. Or you look at the offensive line, and people are like, well, we had good players on the offensive line at times. I mean, if it's not Dallas Thomas, it's like, why were they underachieving? It's because the coaching was bad. And then everyone suffers. So now you've got some bad players. You've got some underachieving players. You've got coaches who don't know what they're doing. They've lost the locker room. They never had the locker room. And it just turns into a complete mess. So really what you're looking at with Adam Gase and this regime coming in, you know, Vance Joseph, Mike Tannenbaum really finally getting his fingerprints on this team, is we're going to find out early on, you know, who stays and who goes. Because, I mean, they're not looking to win with the Joe Philbin roster here. They're not looking to win with a roster that was put together by Jeff Ireland and then Dennis Hickey. I mean, they want their DNA. They want their fingerprints on this thing. So we'll find out early on. And you're already seeing the fact that they've been so prudent with a lot of the stuff on defense. They're looking to add their guys, and they're not looking to do it through free agency, which has been frustrating for a lot of people because they do think this is a talented team. I would say it's a team with some really talented players. I mean,
and a
you
lot
know,
of
Jarvis
holes.
Lane. Yeah.
Just to interrupt you for a second. It's a team with a lot of talent. What, probably 5, 6, 7 kind of on the line Pro Bowl players or Pro Bowl players somewhere in there, and tons of holes, which last year we thought the high talent could make up for the holes, and we found out how quickly that's not true. So it's really about not raising necessarily and getting more top talent. It's about filling the middle of the roster, really, the starters that are not the Pro Bowl players. Who are those guys, and what do they look like? That's going to be the difference this year, and you're not going to fill them all in 1 year.
No, and that's what they're seeking to – I mean, you're looking at the long build here. They can say they're not rebuilding. I would call it rebuilding on the fly. I think they want to compete, but they're not going to go ahead and cut off their nose to spite their face in the process, or whatever cliche you want to put out there. I mean, they're looking they're adding their talent through the draft. And that's a painful process, especially when this team is underachieved and just been bad. And you're told that you're going to have to wait longer. But the one thing that we'll find out before anything else is what Miami has under center, and whether he's worth the long-term contract, or if the Dolphins should go ahead and think about looking elsewhere eventually after the season.
Well, I think
Lewis. Oh no, go ahead. Go ahead, Keith.
Well, no, I was just gonna say that. I think that the fact of Gase giving a little bit more control to Tannehill under center and letting him, you know, be able to call out different plays at the line of scrimmage, I think that you're either going to see a huge development, like you said, with Tannehill, where he feels more comfortable with the offense doing stuff like that, or you're going to see him take – he's going to regress tremendously. And at that point, Miami will move on. But one thing I will say that I would like to get on is the fact of – this year in free agency, it seems like Miami's been a lot more conservative this year. A lot of that has to do with salary cap, but they're not really just going out and picking just anybody. They're not going after huge names. They're going after people to fill holes, which goes back to what Keith had just said about, you know, they want to get their own guys, their own fingerprint on the team. But the biggest thing is building through the draft, because as all of us know, there's not many teams in the league that have built Super Bowl champion teams through free agency. It's just very hard to do. They do it through the draft, and it is a painful process, and it takes a long time to get there. But I think a lot of Dolphins fans are to the point now that as long as we see improvement and it's not the same rigmarole every single year, I think a lot of Dolphins fans are going to be happy with that, because it is something different. It's not the same mistake that's being made every single year. So I do agree with that.
Lewis, what you got, man? What are your thoughts on how good Gase can make Tannehill?
I'm sorry. Say it again. You kind of zoned out there.
Sorry. How good do you think Gase can get Tannehill this year?
Like rankings? Is that what you mean?
No, just performance. I'm not looking for numbers. I'm not talking about quarterback rating. I'm just talking about being just getting better. I mean, you can put a percentage on it. You can put a number on it, a ranking, like however you want to quantify it. Feel free. Be my guest.
Well, I wouldn't quantify with quarterback rating, because everybody knows how much I hate that. But at this point, I'm just looking at the situation, and I feel like if this guy Gase is really all he's cracked up to be, somebody who's going to look at the offense and try to get the best out of the players instead of trying to put the players in specific positions, and somebody who does actually know what a good quarterback looks like. I saw Miko complaining a little earlier and Max calling her out, so kudos to him again. But I'm looking at this situation and thinking, anything, if he knows how to run an offense, if he knows how to build one, make players do what they do best, which includes Ryan Tannehill, of course, I'm hoping he looks at the film and realizes that he's good on the run. I'm hoping he realizes that as long as he has the freedom to run when he feels like it, he can get defenses to back up and give him more leeway to work with, which only helps him. It's really just little things. And if we can get those little things functioning, then I expect Ryan Tannehill to take a huge jump. Maybe he'll get back to what he was in 2014, which I would be happy with. Maybe he takes a little baby step better than 2016. All that really matters, though, and I hate to make it sound like this at this point, the only thing that really matters is, even if Ryan Tannehill has an all-pro year, if the Dolphins don't win, no one's going to care. And that's really the saddest part for me. I think he'll be really good if Gase knows what he's doing. But if the Dolphins don't win stuff, then it's not going to matter, because everybody's going to be calling for his head anyway.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. But, I mean, at some point we need our quarterback to step up and just kind of put the team on his shoulders, not for the entire season and not take it to the playoffs or Super Bowl on his own, but even some games. I'd like to see him kind of take over a game or two. And I said that last year, and I don't know that it really happened.
Well, how many quarterbacks were able to just do that, Ron? You had Brady, you had Rodgers, and you couldn't even count Peyton last year. So that leaves, what, Drew Brees, maybe Ben Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson, possibly one, twice, tops. Like, no quarterback besides those who are truly, truly elite can say, I'm going to put this whole team on my back and just watch this. Just give me the ball and I'll make things happen. Like, that just doesn't work. It doesn't work that way.
It's true. There's not a lot, but, I mean, it's what you're trying to find, though. It's always what you're trying to find.
There's 32 teams, and only two quarterbacks you can count on to do that sort of thing. So you just kind of have to build – that's why it's called building around your quarterback, not saying that the quarterback is this, and we're just going to give him bits and pieces here and make him fill in the blanks. That's not how you build a championship team. That's why the Packers haven't gotten back to the Super Bowl. They're just looking at Aaron Rodgers and thinking, oh, well, we have Aaron Rodgers. We're good no matter what we do. No.
Well,
that's not how it works.
And then maybe the way I'm kind of wording it is wrong. Let's put it more this way. And I think we could name a lot more quarterbacks when I describe it like this. When you take the quarterback off that team, they were a playoff team and now they're not, or they were a Super Bowl contending team and now they're barely a playoff team. I'd say there's more than two quarterbacks in the league. I mean, you could say Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, those guys right off the bat, and I'm sure I'm missing several top quarterbacks. That I mean, if you take Joe Flacco off the Ravens, I mean, which is usually a good team.
Well, who are you replacing him with? Who are you replacing him with?
Replacement level quarterback. That's the thing. Replacement level quarterback. Can we sit there and say that the Dolphins still wouldn't have won 5 or 6 games if Matt Moore was the quarterback last year?
If Matt Moore was the quarterback last year, it would have been a lot worse.
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know. I'm not going to sit there and say, yeah, it would have been the same. I'm just saying it's a question. It's a valid question. You know, is that quarterback 3-4 games better than your second string quarterback, your replacement level? Tony Romo's another one that definitely, oh my God, that team just fell apart without him. Can we say that the Dolphins just fall apart if Tannehill goes away and you put in the backup quarterback, whether that's Matt Moore or whoever? I don't know. That I think that's really where we need to see Tannehill get to be where, like, he leaves, like, he gets hurt, he's off the field, and we lose him for 4 or 5 games, and the team just isn't good, and they were playing pretty good before. That's where we're not with Tannehill right now. That's where we want to be. It's not necessarily about, you know, oh, he puts us on the back. And I guess I kind of described that wrong. I think when you kind of put it that way, I think it kind of opens our eyes a little bit to know that Tannehill's not where we want him to be yet. But, I mean, we're going to just hope that Gase can start to get him there, because I think he's got all the tools. I feel like he's got the talent. I'm not a game tape guy, but those who watch his tape and really study what he does play by play are impressed with Tannehill. Those who just look at wins and losses and QBR are not impressed with Tannehill. So it just depends on your point of view, I suppose, with that.
He has an outstanding skill set for sure. There's some things that are, you always hear the pocket presence. I feel like that's almost like a junk criticism now. Like, people don't even know what they're talking about when they say, well, it's pocket presence.
I don't even know what that means. I got to be honest with you. I'd love somebody to sit there and tell me, when you say he has bad pocket presence, what the hell do you mean?
Essentially, that
means
he can shuffle around and dodge people in the pocket instead of having to run away.
Yeah, feeling the pressure.
When he gets hit by the defensive lineman in 2 seconds, well, he goes down. So he has bad pocket presence. Because every time
he should have gotten out of the way,
you know, so he has bad pocket. I hate that excuse. That's an Omar thing. That whole pocket presence thing created by him.
There was also another appearance today.
I'm sorry. Somebody was talking. I didn't hear who it was.
I said it made another appearance today.
So what is it? The pocket presence thing or Omar Kelly?
No, just it. Period.
That's a whole separate subject. I can't even stand. Again, like, I agree with you, Lewis, and we don't even know what it is. Whatever it means, I have no idea.
And Ron, you know, Tannehill, he's caught a lot of flack from a lot of Dolphin fans that he hasn't produced and stuff like that, but you're absolutely right. You know, I've heard it discussed a couple times that, you know, when you're doing a three-step drop and in the middle of your second step, you're getting hit or you're having to dodge something. Even when you're in shotgun and by the time the ball gets to you, you get defensive ends that are literally using our offensive line as turnstiles, and he's got to take off and run. So, I mean, in order to have pocket presence, you have to have an offensive line that, first of all, builds you a pocket and doesn't allow people to come running through at you where you have to take off. Now, the good thing for Tannehill is he's probably one of the most accurate quarterbacks on the run. So that's a benefit. But then again, when you're constantly on the run, you're going to develop that skill set where you are going to become that accurate because you got no choice. I would like to see I would like to see Tannehill actually – I wouldn't mind seeing him run a little bit more because, I mean, the kid's got wheels. He can run. He has shown that. But the problem is his ability to get on the ground and stop from taking that hit, even though he gets up and he starts smiling about it because he's having fun, that's great. But that goes back to the story where if he goes down, do we have anybody that's going to come in and take over? I will have to agree. I think as Lewis said it, I'd have to agree. I think if Matt Moore comes in, I think we're worse. So that's a scary feeling because if Tannehill goes down, I don't think Matt Moore has got the skill set to actually do the things that Tannehill does. But, I mean, that's my opinion. Some people may disagree.
Because the thing with Matt Moore is that he is big-time boom or bust. He's either going to throw 5 touchdowns every game or he's going to throw 5 interceptions. There is no middle ground with Matt Moore. But I digress with that. Back to Tannehill. The running thing, I mean, I will never forget last year, and I couldn't find the transcripts conveniently enough because it was just so damning to see it, and then you read it, and you're thinking, did you really just say that? Dan Campbell said in a press conference, I swear he did, and I found it, and I can't find the transcripts anymore because I think they took them down because of how bad it was. He said, and now this is paraphrasing, that they didn't want Tannehill to bail out of the pocket. They wanted him to sit back there and wait for somebody to come open. That's not on – that means that the only time they wanted him running was when they meant for him to run. So no scrambling, no running away, no trying to move forward and get yards. Stay back there and wait for something to happen. The biggest parts of Cam Newton and Russell Wilson's game is that they run more than any quarterbacks in the NFL, and it's not even close. Cam Newton, I think he ran I can't remember how many times he ran the ball last year, but it was way, way higher than the one who was in second place, who was Russell Wilson, by the way. The biggest parts of their games is the ability to use their legs when they want to. Ryan Tannehill literally had his legs taken out from under him, and they told him, stay put. So you took away one of the biggest parts of his game for what? You don't want him to get hurt? He's going to get hurt anyway because he's getting knocked to the ground because he's waiting for somebody to get open or he just doesn't see it. So if I'm the Dolphins, and this just seems like common sense here, don't you think? If you're going to let your quarterback get hit, don't you think it's a better idea to let him get hit going forward instead of backwards?
I agree.
Can I say one more thing on this, actually?
Go for it.
I think Adam Gase, I suspect that he's going to know early on what he has in Ryan Tannehill. I think it's going to be harder for fans to get an accurate gauge on Tannehill in the Gase era in the first season. And the reason I say that is because Tannehill's numbers are already pretty good. He's got a great completion percentage. He typically throws over 4,000 yards a season. I mean, he's got a good touchdown total. I mean, the stuff he posts, I mean, like, they're not bad numbers. He was, what, eighth in default completion percentage last year, even though people claim he can't throw downfield, it was like eighth. So the way he's going to be judged is with the win column. And I'm not certain that the win column is going to improve next season. I think next year is the feeling out year with this new roster, the new coaching staff in place, really the first year that this new regime takes hold. So I think that it's going to be confusing, and you're going to see a lot of the same. A lot of people claim that, well, Tannehill's just not good enough, get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the numbers aren't bad. It's not like his completion percentage, I'm fairly certain, is better than Andrew Luck's, I think.
Yeah,
so,
it's a little skewed, though, Keith, because remember, he throws a lot of, like, 5-yard little dump-offs and stuff, so it's a little off.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the completion percentage is high. It's a good number. It's not like you look at any of his numbers and you think, well, that's subpar. That's not very good. Ryan Tannehill posts pretty good numbers the past couple of seasons. Even in a down year, it wasn't that bad. So if you're looking at the number or to judge him numerically, I think you're going to have a hard time doing that because it's not like you're going to see a great improvement in a lot of that stuff going forward. In fact, if anything, in terms of completion percentage, you might even see a little bit of a dip depending on what happens. But the other Keith brought up the best point here, which is that where you will know what's up with Ryan Tannehill is that they're going to put the ball in his hand late in games. And I think it was on Lewis's show last week. We were talking about how, games against the Packers in 2014 against Detroit, a lot of people blame Ryan Tannehill for for those losses. But, I mean, Joe Philbin admitted himself that he pretty much took the ball out of Ryan Tannehill's hands late in those games when all they needed was a first down to win. I mean, if you're talking about that Packers game, I think on third down he threw some high percentage, low risk, short out to the right side of the field, and then that was that. You know, they didn't trust him to win those games. Adam Gase has stated explicitly that he's going to allow Ryan Tannehill late in those games in those situations. The ball is in his hands. It's his call. So that's, I think, probably going to be where the proof is in the pudding going forward.
Also, I'd also like to say that with Tannehill, I mean, in order for a quarterback to get his teammates behind him and confidence, you have to give that quarterback the ball. You have to let him prove himself, you know, on the battlefield that, listen, guys, we're going to do this. Marino did it. Now, obviously, I'm not comparing Tannehill to Marino by any stretch of the imagination, but Don Shula had the faith in Marino, give him the ball, let him do what he's got to do. Now, Marino being a freak of nature, he was able to do that his rookie season with no problem. However, Tannehill, in order to get the people behind him, his teammates behind him, they've got to see him take charge of it and go. And if the play, in my personal opinion, if the players don't have the faith or the coaches don't have the faith in the quarterback, there's a lot of the players that's going to be sitting there in that huddle looking at him thinking, the coaches don't trust him, so why should we? And I'm not saying that really affects a ton, but it's one of those things where, okay, he throws a pass, it's incomplete, it was a bad choice. Now the players get back in the huddle and they're like, all right, here we go again, another letdown. You know, and, you know, Keith, you're absolutely right. You know, the Green Bay game and the Detroit game, I mean, I personally think that those losses were on the defense because I think Ryan Tannehill did what he needed to do and along with the offense to win those games. But we lost it late because the defense gave up too much stuff. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I'm really hoping that Tannehill blossoms with this. When he's getting, you know, more power at the line, he's able to call some plays from what he sees on the line of scrimmage. And it's either going to be, like I said before, it's going to be a huge step forward. You're going to see, you know what, he can take on this responsibility. He's got the confidence and the faith from the coaches, which in turn is going to transition to the players. And I'm hoping you're going to see a completely different offense than we've seen the past couple years. Because I think Devontae Parker is going to step up. I personally think it's going to be a big target for Tannehill, especially down in the red zone. And Jordan Cameron, our tight end, supposedly Gase wants to get him more involved. And the completion percentage that Tannehill has, you know, even though it's maybe 5-10 yard dumps, Brady has made a career on 5 and 10 yard dumps that were turned into 20 yard gains. So I don't care if he throws a 2 yard slant; if it turns into a 30 yard gain, I'm all for it. So I'm really hoping that he makes that turn. I really am, and I don't want to spend too much more time on Tannehill. But I'm excited with Gase being this quarterback guru because if anybody can turn Tannehill around and give him that faith and confidence, I think Gase is going to be able to do that. I just don't want to get my hopes up too much.
Yeah, agreed for sure, man. Agreed. It's gonna be exciting. I mean, let's face it. Even though there's a lot of trepidation from Dolphins fans, including myself, about what the Dolphins are really gonna look like this year, we know we have a lot of holes. One thing we could definitely be excited about because it's new and it's the unknown is, what does the offense look like under Gase? What does Tannehill look like under Gase? Because we know there's some talent on the offensive side of the ball. We a lot of people have faith in Tannehill. A lot of don't, but. We don't really know where running back is right now. I think obviously we'll know by the time we get into the season, but you consider Parker and Jordan and, you know, Landry and even Stills, which I'm not a big Stills fan, but I know a lot of Dolphins are. I think he can all be a piece. So it's going to be exciting to see. But I do want to switch to a different subject. It's something I kind of want to wrap up. And that's the whole Miko Grimes thing. And the reason I'm bringing that up is for me personally, it's going to be about really just kind of putting an end to some would say, yeah,
like a drug for you.
Yeah. It's just some would say my obsession with the Miko Grimes thing. I would agree. I got into a big beef on Twitter with somebody about 5 days ago. He let me have it. And then we kind of had a block you, we'll block you too, literally. And And I actually went to my other Twitter account and invited him onto the show and told him, hey, you know, cooler heads prevail. It's all cool. I haven't heard from him, but then he didn't block me on that account either. So perhaps he just hasn't seen the tweet. And he had some points. He was kind of a little rude about his points, calling me a 12-year-old girl. And, you know, but he had some points. I definitely had kind of taken it to the nth degree with the Migo Grimes thing because she really got under my nerves. But I think part of it was I could easily see before this year started last year that it was going to be a problem. It was going to cause a problem for the Dolphins. And it aggravated me that we had a coach like Philbin who just wasn't willing to go in there and or a team that, or an organization who doesn't seem to be willing to try and take care of that situation for whatever reason. So that's really what aggravated me the most. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it, Lewis?
First of all, I have to bring it up again, and I don't know if I told you this already or not, but it's not like the Dolphins didn't try. I've said this several times, and this was reported by Armando a few weeks ago. It's that the Dolphins tried 5 times to tell Miko to shut up. She didn't care. So it's not like they tried. It's not like they didn't try. It's just that they literally did what Miko said they couldn't do. They tried to tell her to shut up, and Miko said, they can't tell me to shut up. And so it came to be. They tried, they failed, because Miko said, screw you, I'm not going to do it.
It was like she was purposely sabotaging the team her husband played for, because I don't know why. I honestly, it's just because, you know, and the defense was one of the worst defenses in the league, Miko. I mean, sorry, it was. You know, and not saying Brent Grimes was the reason for that or anything, but you can blame stuff on Tannehill all day long, but they were like mid-20s in pass defense, mid-20s in rush defense. They sucked. So you can sit there and say, you know, and I hear Omar say, oh, you got an offense that only scored over 20 points 3 times. He keeps saying that over and over again. Yeah, how about the defense? Look at all the points they gave up. Look at all the yards they gave up. Look at all the third downs they gave up. Give me a break. You know, look at the time of possession. and then sit there and try and tell me. And then look at the fact that they kept on throwing the ball 500 times in a row, not running it because Lazor's a moron, leading up to Philbin's firing. I mean, it was like, I mean, all of that counts into it. You can't just sit there and say that it's all Tannehill's fault. And this is where I kind of get back and forth with her. But, you know, me and her went back and forth a few times on Twitter, that's for sure. Once probably 5 months ago, once a couple weeks ago, to finally, I guess she'd had enough of me. She blocked me. But then where I got aggravated 5 days ago and then the guy got on me is I get on Twitter and somebody tweets me that she's tweeting about me a week after we haven't talked, and I'm like, I don't understand that. It's like, you're a player's wife. You're a rich millionaire. You should definitely be moving on. I need to move on, but she should definitely be moving on. Why she's tweeting about me a week later when I haven't even said anything to her because she blocked me, I had no idea. So I kind of started, you know, flip out again because I'm an emotional guy. I'm sure some people who follow me on Twitter might know that. And it's just kind of a ridiculous situation. But then there was people on Twitter saying, well, I keep bringing this up. I'm the one driving this conversation. I promise you, I wish I had that power. I am not the one driving this. I'm pretty sure she was today. Didn't Lewis, didn't you say something she was mouthing off about the Dolphins again today on Twitter? I mean, I don't know. She blocked me, so I can't see their
tweet. I saw something that Max said. Okay, hey, let me see if I can pull it up here real quick. I'm going to see if I can find it because Max is the one. Because I was reading Max's tweet, and it was a quote from Miko. Let me see if I can find it here.
The first comment on that tweet is, I don't know who sent that, but it is outstanding. It is just like a total slap to the face. Whoever
I feel
was
bad
the first
for Brent,
one.
It's
probably
Max. Scared to leave his wife.
Hang on. Here it is. Here's the tweet. Okay, so the tweet says that this is Miko. Says, I just don't get how y'all mad at a coach that knows what a good QB looks like, didn't have it, asked for it, was told no, and kept trying. How? That's Miko.
Do you see the comment, though?
Whatever.
Yeah, which is end of conversation right there. But one of the first comments on there, someone was like, Gase knows cornerbacks too. Bye-bye. And I was like, oh, boom.
And this is when Max. And this
hashtag
is Max
cool.
Now. Max replies, I know what an airplane is. Doesn't mean I can fly it.
That's awesome. Good job, Max, if you're listening. I appreciate it. You know, I wish I had more time on the show because if somebody's listening live right now and would tweet Miko, 773-897-6237, she got 15 minutes left to come on. I'll give her free reign to go off of me, whatever. I don't care. But, I mean, come on. It's enough. Nico needs to let it go. I'm letting it go after this. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say I'll never tweet about Meiko Grimes again. What I'm telling everybody is I'm letting go of the obsession. No more, you know, tweeting all day about Meiko Grimes and bitching about it. And now I have to go to a different Twitter handle and screenshot her tweets and put them on because she blocked me. And all that mess. I'm just making a promise to them. It's like, so if you go on my Twitter feed, you're not going to see like nothing but Meiko stuff all day. I'll admit that the fanatic, and I don't remember what his name was again, but the guy that we got into the block fight there. I'll admit that he had a point, even though he said it kind of rudely. It was fanatic 413. Yes, he had a point. I was tweeting about Meiko way too much. It was time for me to let it go. But, I mean, I really think it's time for her to let it go, and she definitely doesn't seem to be willing to let it go. I wonder, for how long is she going to keep tweeting about the Dolphins? I mean, forever? Are we going to be on Twitter in 20 years, and Meiko's still tweeting about the Dolphins? You know, just go away.
She's still in the state, though. So, I mean, she's right down the road from Miami. And the fact of the matter is, the reason she's only down the road from Miami is because no other team in the league would take a chance because of her. Not because of her husband, but because of her. And I think Vince is scared to leave her.
Yeah, I heard that the Patriots were interested in signing Grimes, and they didn't care about the Meiko thing. But maybe they felt like they could keep her mouth shut. I kind of feel like nobody could keep her mouth shut. But
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. New England.
So you think if Bill Belichick tells Brent she needs to be quiet, she's going to be quiet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me, Ron. Believe me. If Belichick or somebody like Mike McCarthy told her to keep her mouth shut, she would, at the very least, not talk bad about her team. I'm sure she will spend the rest of her life saying exactly how awful the Dolphins were and how terrible of a person Ryan Tannehill is. That will happen for the rest of her natural life, which, I don't know, maybe it's a fake life. I don't know. Maybe it won't last much longer. But it's
wow.
As fake as everything else about her. But so, in any case, she will not badmouth Jameis Winston maybe ever. And there are reasons I won't say on air that I think that is, but I think now that I said it, everybody knows what I mean. And as horrible as it is, I believe it's the truth, and I think a lot of people also would say that it is the truth. Jameis Winston will not get any criticism from Meiko Grimes.
Well, it can't.
Does she like Florida State?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah, she's an FSU fan. But you know, another thing is too, you can't go from one team where you sat there bashing the quarterback all day, every day, and then go to another team and 6 months later you're doing it again, because then she just looks ridiculous. Like, if you start hearing Jameis Winston this and Jameis Winston that. So regardless of what the situation is, she's not dumb enough, because nobody ever said she was dumb. That's for sure. I mean, she's an intelligent woman, that's for sure.
Well, a lot of people have said she's dumb, but I digress.
Well, I honestly don't think she's dumb. And, you know, and I've listened to her with Omar on the radio. I mean, I was listening to that show avidly because it was one of the, you know, the few shows on the regular radio, especially, that was talking, you know, Dolphins nonstop. So I was listening to them when they were doing their show on the weekends before she got arrested and fired. You know, I listened to that and I disagreed with a lot of what she said, but I agreed with some of the stuff too. And it, you know, I think she can speak intelligently about sports. I mean, I never understood what her game was. It felt a little kind of like sabotage. Like, why are you trying to sabotage this team? Why are you trying to kind of split a locker room? And a lot of people said it wouldn't split a locker room. And Walt Akins, and I mentioned this last night on your show, Lewis, that Walt Akins went on Dolphinatics, which is also a Blog Talk radio show, if anybody heard Dave Hiley. So Dolphinatics on there. And, you know, a lot of people were asking Walt Akins last year before the season started, what about this Meiko thing? What about this Meiko thing? And, you know, he handled it very well, very professionally, and pretty much said, it's not a big deal. We just come in and we just play. Well, I think by the end of the season, we could all see it was a distraction. Meiko was a distraction to this team. There's no way to me she wasn't. What do you think, Keith Beebe? Do you think that Meiko was a distraction to the team last year, or do you think she's just a distraction to the fans?
There's no way. When you're out there talking about the quarterback like that, I mean, we saw, and I mentioned this on your show, I think a couple of weeks ago, but like, I can handle, you know, the Dolphins losing. I can handle 62-7. I can handle Dave Wannstedt and Nick Saban and literally all the crap that has happened to this team. But I have never been more embarrassed to be a fan of this team than after week 16 last year against the Colts. Like, that was – it was horrifying. It was embarrassing. It was just shameful. And there's no way you can act like that, especially with how active players are with social media these days. There's no way that that is anything less than a distraction for the team. And when you – I mean, how would you feel? Like, I mean, you notice that winning teams out there don't have this issue. And when they do, they squash it fast, which is why when it comes up that the Dolphins tried to talk to her five times, that's four times too many. It should have been one, and if this happens again, you're not going to like what the result. I mean, not like you can take a hard line, and I'm not trying to sound tough about it, but, I mean, you're talking about your professional sports franchise. And now there's precedent that has been set that you'll allow this kind of stuff to go on. That's why, like, Philbin, in my opinion, had to go. And, I mean, like, I don't blame Man Campbell for it because, I mean, that guy was honestly – he was honestly a sitting duck anyway. So it's not like he's going to sit there. He's not going to get tough with it. But that's something that needed to be squashed immediately. And, I mean, I'm not making an excuse for Ryan Tannehill, but I guess I kind of am, that people wonder – why, you know, the inconsistent performances and everything. Your own team won't even back you up against something like this. Like, how would you, I mean, if I was the face of a franchise, the way that, I mean, Ryan Tannehill is the face of this franchise.
Okay, right. Well, it was later reported, Keith, and I don't know if you even take this into account, but Mike Pouncey, Rashad Jones, Jarvis Landry, I think it was a couple more. They all went to Brent and said, "Hey, dude, chill out," and it didn't work. So
she wasn't helping the team. Therefore, if Brent isn't going to say, you know, you're not helping me, you're not helping my team. So how much did Brent really care about helping the team?
Tossed her under the bus almost immediately.
I'm sorry.
When they asked him, he tossed her under the bus almost immediately when they asked him about at the end of the season. He was like, "I don't know. You have to ask her. We haven't really talked about it."
Brent has always said
that's just passing it off.
Has always said that Nico is her own person, but that's his way of saying I can't control her. And
exactly.
He can't.
Either can't control her, or I'll be honest with you, I'm going to keep saying it. I've been saying it. If she's saying it and she's gotten this information, it's not like Brent's at home with her and they're at the dinner table and they're saying, "I think Ryan Tannehill sucks," and I think he's the best, honey, and you better put on some smiling face because he's over here in 5 minutes to play cards. I don't think it was going down like that. I think Brent Grimes was talking much crap, and he was one of the leaks out of that locker room that was causing problems and the negative talk about Tannehill and the leaks, and one of the sources was likely coming from Brent Grimes as well. And, of course, that can never be confirmed, and this is just my opinion. There is no fact, but I would bet he was as much a problem behind the scenes with that situation as she was. And that's why the situation couldn't be quashed. He didn't want it quashed.
Yeah,
That's why he tossed her under the bus then. Because, I mean, I agree that I think he had more of a part in it than people let on. But he made it sound like it's solely like she's just gone rogue. And all of a sudden, like, all of these leaks that are coming out of this locker room are solely just her imagination. So he took zero ownership of it, which I had a serious problem with. I mean,
which makes it even worse.
Ron, I got to say this, you know, even if that's the case, you know, and I mean, Brent comes home and obviously he's frustrated because he wants to win and all this stuff. And I mean, it happens, you know, in football, you get frustrated and then you start talking like, you know, they're sitting at the dinner table and she's like, "You know what? I just don't think Tannehill is the quarterback for you guys," because she's really into his job and the sport aspect and the franchise aspect. And I get all that. I can even respect that to a point. But when you sit back and you're sitting at the dinner table and your husband is sitting there telling you things that he thinks about the team, he's telling you that in confidence, I think. He's telling you, he's venting to you his frustration because the Dolphins are giving away games or, you know, Tannehill didn't throw as many completions as he should have. He was missing his target or whatever the case may be. But as husband and wife, I would think that he's telling her this stuff in confidence, not expecting her to go and blab social media and completely downgrade the franchise and downgrade the face of the franchise in Tannehill. And then when she starts doing it, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking he kind of throws his hands up and he's like, "You know what, it's not going to matter." because no matter what I say, she's not going to stop because she's her own person, like what he said. So I think deep down, Brent might have actually had some frustration with her, but it's one of those where she's the alpha dog. There's no doubt about it.
No, he didn't. And I'm not going to comment on what a couple does in their bedroom, but I don't think he cared at all.
Maybe he didn't. I mean, just when he starts catching heat for it, I'm thinking in my mind, and I'm thinking that maybe he regretted actually saying something. There was some regret there for saying something to her because he didn't think maybe she was going to take it that far. Maybe he did. I don't know. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors. I don't know him personally. I don't even know her personally. I mean, Ron, you know her more personally probably than anybody besides Brent. But
I don't know her personally, that's for sure.
my whole thing is I think that there might have been some kind of regret with Brent telling her things because he didn't think she may have taken it that far. But in turn, maybe he knew exactly what she was going to do and he didn't want to say it. So he knew by telling her she was going to spread the word.
Yeah, he used her like a ventriloquist dummy as far as everything. And that's how I feel. Everything that was coming out of her mouth was coming out of his mouth, too. That's just the way I felt. Like not saying that she wasn't speaking for her, you know, what she really believed, but she was repeating many things I believe that Brent Bro's probably saying, you know, when they were together or whatever, when groups of those guys were together, when it was them and when it was, I don't know, the guy who drove for Uber, I don't even remember his name now. And
it may not. That's what I was about to say. That it may not even be Brent, guys. Like you just brought him up, AJ Francis. They're buddies. Tony Lippitz. He's still friends with Miko. And then you have I think Matt Hazel. She's also friends with Miko. Mike Wallace. You know how much she loved him because of Omar and all that stuff. Brandon Gibson, Brian Hartline. They're still a buddy. She tried to use Heartland as an example for why Tannehill sucks so bad. She has connections. It's not just Brent coming home and saying this stuff. She made friends with a lot of these guys.
Along with Omar Kelly. Along with Omar Kelly. That was definitely a big part of it as well.
Almost all the connections. Birds of a feather flock together. All of these people you see Miko with, all of these people you see Omar with, they have this same type of personality. They mesh together because they are all of a like mind, and that leads to the same conclusions.
All right, guys, Keith, I'm going to let you say something to kind of wrap it up a little bit there because we got about 2 minutes left and the show ends. And I found out last time on these live shows, when they end, they really just end and everybody's gone and it hangs up. So, did you have anything final to say on it, Keith? Keith Beebe, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I was like, which one are you talking to?
I keep forgetting about that.
I think that the important thing here is that she's gone. And I mean, and Brent's gone too. I mean, not far enough. They're now just on the Gulf side of Florida. So, I mean, as long as she's tweeting, it's still going to be a problem for some people. And it is irritating. I get that, especially because, I mean, there's no connection to the Dolphins anymore. It should just be done. But, I mean, the only way that I think – I mean, if you're looking for how Ryan Tannehill can grow from the situation or – because I thought he showed tremendous poise by not ever addressing this situation because I think a lot of people would have.
Mm-hmm,
so
I think he
deserves a lot of credit in that regard. In fact, I don't know that he's ever thrown any of his – I mean, he hasn't thrown his offensive line under the bus when his receivers were terrible. He didn't throw them under the bus. He didn't
never.
Throw Philbin under
he's
the
never
bus.
He's never gone the way of Jeff George, Jay Cutler, even Aaron Rodgers. He's never done that. Not ever seen publicly.
Yeah, and like when they brought up Philbin, even when Philbin was fired, he was like, you know, it's out of my hands. So the best revenge he can get is just to grow under Gase and have a really good season because now he does have a coach and a regime that has his back. So now it's all about going out there, improving it, and making them look good.
All right, guys, so I'm going to wrap it up here. I got about 40 seconds left. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at UnsquishTheFish. If you want to follow Keith Beebe on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle, Keith, again?
It's Keith Dolphin, so KeefDolFan.
All right. And Lewis, your Twitter handle?
at FL Sport Debater.
All right. And other Keith Enfinger, what do you even remember your Twitter handle? You're like never on there. Okay, I think he dropped. All right, so everybody, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Fins up, and we'll see you guys real soon. Appreciate you listening.
Bye-bye.